I'm pleased to have with us in studio, and he's here regularly every month, the president of Murata Wealth Management, David Murata, joins us. And David, we're talking today about the rising tax burden and how to avoid it. And a shame that we have to have the conversation, but very glad that you're here to talk about it.
Yeah, there's nothing like taxes that that get people's emotions running, either in despair or in anger.
There are a few people here locally that love taxes, and we've talked about them in the past. But, you know, it's like, tax me more, tax me more, tax me till I bleed. This guy named Waldo Jackwith said infamously a few years ago, tax me more. And I don't even understand that mentality, because anybody can give anything they want to the government. But it seems like when people say that, they really want not to be taken from themselves, but they want you and me and everybody else to, quote unquote, give more.
Yeah, I think most people who say that would be glad to give a dollar so long as everyone else in America gave their fair share, which might be $10 from you or $20 from me or something like that. And they're glad to contribute their nickel only because they know that lots of other stuff gets glued onto it. The government does have the ability that you can contribute to the national debt anytime you want. Mm-hmm. So for people who would like to give more taxes, I would love to see their taxes and to see how much charitable giving to the government debt they're doing.
Yeah, I would like to see that as well. And, you know, it's funny because we had set up a fund here in Charlottesville some years ago called Friends of Charlottesville. And I think they got about enough money to plant one or two trees, and then they shut it down because nobody really wanted to put up. David, you have a couple of upcoming seminars. And before we get to the issue of taxes, let's talk about that and issue the invitation.
Yeah, it's certainly a dollar saved in taxes is worth more than a dollar earned, because the dollar earned, they're going to tax you on it anyway. So we have a free NAPFA Consumer Education Foundation seminar coming up. It's next Wednesday, April 18th at the Senior Center, and it's from 5:30 to 6:30. And it's all on taxes and estate planning for seniors. We're going to look at especially the changes this year. If you bring along your 1040, we're going to look at 1040 lines and see how you can read your taxes to understand better how to reduce your tax burden and meet your financial goals. And then the day before Tuesday, April 17th, from 6:30 to 7:30 at Northside Library, we're giving a talk on the best ETFs of 2012. Those are familiar with the Gone Fishing portfolios I published in last year around this time. I'm updating those, talking about some dynamic asset allocation and how you should change your asset allocation this year, given what's going on in the markets. So it's the best ETFs of 2012.
Great. And there's more information. If you want to contact David Murata, you could go online to muratonmoney.com. And I would encourage you to go there. There's some great articles and really helpful tips there as well, as we're talking about the tax burden. So how do we know that the tax burden is actually rising? You know, people pay differently depending on what the situation is, but how do we actually measure what the tax burden is in America?
Yeah, there's an organization called the Tax Foundation, and they compute every year something called Tax Freedom Day, and it's the day throughout the year that up until this day, all of the money would have to go to pay taxes, mm-hmm. and then after that day, you start actually working for yourself. And they've been computing Tax Freedom Day for hundreds of, you know, back hundreds of years to see where it's going and how it's creeping. Tax Freedom Today, interestingly enough, this year is arriving on April 17th, which is also Tax Day. it's an easy computation. What's interesting is though, recently, because of the great disparity in between what the government is spending and what the government is actually collecting in taxes, that recently they've begun computing two different days. One is Tax Freedom Day, that is, if we're collecting mm-hmm. taxes. The second is what they're calling Deficit Day, which is actually how much we're spending. And how much we're spending has been ballooning, and it's now all the way out on May 14th instead of April 17th. So there's a whole month of spending throughout the year that we're doing that we're actually not collecting any taxes for, and that has to be paid somehow. It has to be paid either through our children and grandchildren, or it has to be paid through a silent tax, which is not computed in Tax Freedom Day, which is inflation. And inflation is probably one of the most dangerous things going forward, especially the risk of hyperinflation, which is inflation over 10%, double-digit inflation.
We're going to get into the topic of inflation and the deception and lies surrounding that after the break. But I did want to just ask you about this this computation of going into May now if we had tax deficit day where we'd have to tax. But does that assume a straight line progression? In other words, if we take more and more taxes from people, doesn't that cut down productivity? And wouldn't that ultimately extend that date out even further because business would be harmed and would stop producing?
It is. We used to have the American style of growth they called 6.5% gross domestic product growth. Mm-hmm. And now we have the European malaise style of growth, which is 2 or 3%, and largely that's due to too much government intervention, too much government influencing in the economy. In fact, more recent studies have suggested that all of the stimulus spending actually reduces gross domestic product growth, both short term and long term, which is interesting. If Keynes were right, all of the stimulus would have boosted our gross domestic product growth. It looks like actually not only is Keynesian economics wrong, Keynesian economics is exactly the opposite. It's anti-Keynesian economics, and all that stimulus actually hurts our country's growth.
And the interesting thing is that people continue to push that as somehow our economic salvation. 977-1070 is the phone number. We'd love to hear from you. We're talking with David Murata. The topic today is the rising tax burden and how to avoid it. Luke stands by at 977-1070 in The Shilling Show. Hey, we're back with much, much more after the news and weather. Stay with us. Coming up next hour of The Shilling Show, it is Albemarle County Board of Supervisor member Ken Boyd, the budget and beyond. Lots to talk about. And continuing this conversation right now with David Murata. He's online, muratahonmoney.com. The rising tax burden and how to avoid it. 977-1070. That's the phone number here on The Shilling Show, and we do welcome your calls right here around tax time. And so one of the things that we were talking about before the break, and I really wanted to spend some time on this, was the concept of inflation as a hidden tax. And we were talking off the air, David, about who this really hurts and how profound the inflation is, and also the government deception on how it's computed and reported.
Yeah, I was mentioning, I always feel like Mel Gibson at the beginning of Conspiracy Theory, where he's ranting about all these crazy things, and he seems absolutely insane. But by the end of the movie, everything's been proven true. I've been writing a lot about how the government mismeasures inflation. They changed the inflation measurements in the mid-1990s. Mm. And there's a number of stats that keep the sites that keep the stats the old way. Currently, our inflation is running at just about 3%. But if you compute it the old way, inflation's running at about 6%, about 3% higher. And that computation gap between the way that we've been measuring it since 1996 and the way we used to measure it has been about 3% now for about 16 years.
Mm-hmm.
As a result, the gap has been getting wider and wider, and it's currently at about 39%. And you can see this in everything from the price of a loaf of bread or a gallon of milk to a gallon of gasoline. Gasoline is tracked with CPI index fairly consistently from 1960 through 1996. But since 1996, the two have begun to diverge. And if you compute it according to the CPI index, it's gasoline should only cost $2.38 a gallon. Mm. In fact, the average price now is $3.92 a gallon. And that's a 39% gap, which exactly mimics what the shadow stats show us about the two ways of computing inflation. And that computation of inflation has produced two different things. First of all, inflation is actually running a lot higher than the official stats. So when you hear it in the news, just add 3% and you get approximately what inflation is. But inflation is a tax on those people who are stupid enough to hold government bonds or cash,
mm-hmm.
which is why I've written in the past, cash is probably one of the riskiest investments you can hold. It doesn't make very much money, and it loses by 3% every year. How would you like to have an investment that goes down consistently 3% every single year? Or actually, it's going down 6% every single year, but the government's only telling you it's going down 3%. So losing 6% every single year makes cash a very risky investment. The second group it really hurts are those people on Social Security. If someone was on Social Security in 1996, they've experienced now a 39% pay cut in their Social Security because they are not receiving benefit increases the way they should. And Social Security was hard enough to live on in 1996. Now it's getting much, much more impossible to live on. And so for those of you who are counting on Social Security, by the time you retire, I don't know if the Social Security benefit will be worth anything. It's certainly not worth as much today as it was just 16 years ago.
So, David Murata, let's just say there are people in the listening audience right now that are sitting on $50,000 or $100,000 in cash because they're scared. They don't know what to do. They've got it sitting in an account, and they just are at a loss with what to do. I mean, what is a practical thing for someone to do who's sitting on that amount of cash?
Yeah, and there's two different ways. We have three different asset classes for stability. So if you need the money in the next few years, you're trying to find a good place to park it, there are a few places you can park it. You can certainly put it into bonds. Bonds will at least keep up with inflation because they'll make at least hopefully a 6% return. We like foreign bonds, and we like especially emerging market bonds. Emerging market bonds sometimes are known as the riskiest thing in stability. But the emerging market bonds have two things going for them. They're not dollars and they're not euros. So I'm worried about the devaluation of the dollar because of the U.S. debt. I'm worried about the devaluation of the euro because of the European debt. And so we allocate about 40% of our foreign bond portfolio to emerging market bonds. They certainly are performing the best. They're making, you know, between 4 and 6.5% interest. And on top of that, they're in a currency that's not going down by 6%. And so those two things combined together, you should see good returns on the foreign bond side. And then if you put it anywhere on the equity side, you'll do better than cash. Because on the equity side, at least y'all own shares in a company and y'all own some shares in Apple or Coca-Cola. Or if you really want to invest someplace for a little bit more growth, the emerging markets are a great place to invest because, again, they're not dollars, they're not euros. And they have great American-style growth of 6.5% on their gross domestic product.
It's interesting to think of this because, again, people don't realize that all of this is going on behind the scenes. The currency is being devalued. You know, we could go to the store and see that the product packages are shrinking, and so the money is buying less and less and less. But there's also another front on which we're being attacked, and that would be the upcoming tax tsunami, which is really taking place at the end of this year in a number of areas. I think what we'll do is we'll go to the break just a couple of minutes early. And then when we get back, I want to talk about capital gains and dividends, the Bush tax cuts, and other related issues, because you better be ready. It looks like things are going to go way up very, very soon. The Shilling Show with David Murata will return right after this. 977-1070, the phone number. David Murata is our guest. We're talking today about the rising tax burden and how to avoid it. So let's get into the specifics of taxes that will be going up, many of them at the very end of this year. What do we have to look forward to? And I don't really say we're looking forward to, but to anticipate.
Yeah, probably the most disturbing, if you will, change is the change in the dividend taxes. A lot of hay's been made out of Warren Buffett's, you know, secretary paying more in tax than he does. I think actually that's been debunked a couple of times over. But what all that debate failed to analyze is the fact that by the time the investor pays tax on the dividend, the corporation has already paid a corporate tax. So let's just take an example. A corporation earns $100 that it wants to pay in dividends. The first thing that happens is the corporation has to pay $35 at 35% of corporate taxes. So if you will, that's the taxes that get paid because corporations don't pay taxes. Shareholders pay taxes through the corporation. And the whole tax code is designed to try to hide all these taxes from us so that we don't realize how much we're getting taxed. So the corporation pays $35 in taxes. Then and only then can they pay the dividend out. And of the dividend they pay that's remaining, the individual dividend tax or the individual taxpayer pays another 15% dividend tax. The correct amount for that is zero because it's already been taxed, but that pays maybe another $9.75. So what the shareholder receives of the $100 dividend is $55.25. Mm. I think that's a high tax rate. So even though it's only 15% after it's been taxed 35%, all of those taxes together are fairly high. At the end of this year, corporate taxes are going up from 35% to 39.6%. So the first thing that happens is the corporation has to pay on that $100 dividend, the corporation has to pay $39.60. Then the dividends are no longer being qualified to get capital gains tax rates, so they are going to be taxed at the ordinary income tax rate. So a wealthy individual in the top bracket will pay another 39.6% of what's left, which results in him paying another $23.92. Then he has to pay another 3.8% if he's in the highest bracket, because that's the Medicare individual taxes. And so instead of getting his $55.25 like he did this year, he will only receive, of the $100, $34.19.
That's a pretty big chunk.
That is a huge tax increase. To go from getting $55 down to $34 of my $100 dividend is a huge tax rate increase. And that will discourage, one, the paying of dividends. Mm-hmm. It will discourage investing.
Yes.
It will discourage everything like that. At that rate, why not just get treasuries I don't have to pay any taxes on and accept my measly treasury rate of return?
Yeah, this is also short-sighted, David Morata, because as you said, it's going to discourage investment. And what we need right now, you know, we hear all these politicians coming forward in empty uniforms and saying, you know, we need jobs. And yet the tax policies are punishing the creators of jobs, and we will have less jobs.
It is amazing. I remember one person suggesting if we really wanted to reduce poverty in America, we would tax it.
I love it.
Because then no one could afford to be poor. They'd all have to work. But there is some truth to that. The Laffer curve exists. If you tax it 100%, you will collect nothing because no one will be willing to work for slave labor. And the question is, are we beyond the peak in the Laffer curve or not? And I've studied the tax systems and the gross domestic product rate of growths in multiple countries as part of the Freedom Index, and I do believe there is a right sizing to taxation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think South Africa is a little low, and I think we are way high. So there is a right sizing to provide the infrastructure that's necessary in the rule of law. But we are way beyond that, and that's going to put a drag on our gross domestic product growth.
And it has already, and it will continue to do so as we go in the wrong direction. 977-1070 is the phone number. We've got a few minutes left with David Morata, and would love to hear from you. Let's go to the phones and say hello to Greg. Greg, thanks for your patience. You're on with David Morata.
Hey, David. Hey, Rob. And, you were talking about conspiracy theory with Mel Gibson. I love that movie, but I absolutely think the Obama administration and people who think like him are trying to tear down the republic in which we live and the free market system, and the fact they can't stand the fact that individuals own property and have resources. And if you look at every aspect of what they're doing, whether it be Obamacare, the tax system, or whatever they do, it is a way to confiscate your wealth and redistribute it because they want to control you. And eventually, they will get your wealth because of inflation and taxes and health care and all the EPA and all the rules and the agencies. And I think it is treasonous is a nice way to put it. Yeah. And I'm just going to sign off and see what you guys say.
Yeah, Greg, thanks very much. I'll let David comment on that.
Greg, his instincts, I think, are right. Much of the policies are to try to increase government control. I give them a little bit of the benefit of the doubt in that I think they have great motives, but it was Friedrich von Hayek in The Road to Serfdom, Chapter 10, who, first of all, The Road to Serfdom should be required reading in every school in America, especially Chapter 10, because Chapter 10 talks about why someone with really, really good motives makes the worst dictators. Because if someone is just mean and greedy, they'll do it for themselves. But if they're doing it for you for your own good, there is no end to the torture they will inflict and the harm that they will inflict. Chapter 10 of The Road to Serfdom is entitled Why the Worst Always Get on Top. And it is this idea that if you're trying to control everyone for their own good, that is tyranny, and that is exactly what will ensue, is your version of good will get imposed on everyone else, and you cannot stop on that path until you have total control. And I think that's the fatal conceit, which is another title of another one of his books. That's the fatal conceit on the liberals, is they think that all of these good intentions will actually result in good policies, and study after study after study shows that they do not. They result in tyranny, they result in less freedom, And if you flow money through government, that's when you get government corruption. That's when you get a lack of incentivizing of actually producing wealth. And these are the things that are required in order to make a free economy work.
So we've got just a couple of minutes left to talk about some of the ways that people might be able to avoid this coming tax tsunami.
First of all, if you're getting your taxes back now from your tax advisor, you need to check to see if you're getting hit with AMT, because AMT turns a lot of the rules that you might normally do on their head. Because capital gains is rising from 15% to 20%, and then up to 23.6 with the Medicare tax, and maybe up to 39.5 from qualified dividends, because the capital gains is going up so much, you should know what your unrealized capital gains are. This is any investment you have in a taxable account and what the appreciation is. You may want to take that appreciation this year as opposed to waiting till next year, because this year you'll pay a lot less tax on it. So you need to know what your pending capital gains bill might be. You also should know what your pending capital tax bill might be on your IRA, because this is a good year to be converting it to a Roth. You'll pay a lot less tax this year than you will next year. And this is the last year to make a massive conversion if you're in the top tax brackets. You should know what your loss carryforward is, because that is also going to factor into your capital gains. That's on your tax form. There's a line on there where you can find that. You should know if you're doing any charitable giving, you should be giving appreciated tax rather than cash. That's a way of reducing your capital gains burden going forward. If you're funding a kid in college, flowing it through a 529 mm-hmm. gets a tax write-off. And then putting the right investments in the right investment accounts makes a huge difference. So we're going to go over a lot of these at the Senior Center. Bring your tax forms. But tax management is probably the most important component of wealth management that we've been doing over the last few years. And this is the last year to make some huge changes to restructure your tax bill.
We've got about a minute left, and I wanted to ask you about Mitt Romney, who appears almost certain to be the Republican nominee. He has talked some about eliminating, I believe, at least for the middle class, capital gains. Is that an accurate portrayal of his tax policy proposals? And if so, any chance in the world that could happen?
For the middle class, it's possible it could happen. I mean, the correct capital gains tax rate is zero.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps if you talk to economists, it might even should be negative.
Mm-hmm.
You should get a tax refund if you're willing to invest
and put your
capital at risk. But certainly that would help for the middle class tremendously, because it's very hard to make a headwind when a corporation that you've invested in gets $100 in taxes and you only get a small fraction of that in your pocket. It's very hard to make any progress toward retirement. I heard one closing quote. I heard that the best tax policy, this was from a 17th century Frenchman, the best tax policy is like plucking feathers from a geese.
Mm-hmm.
You're trying to get the maximum feathers for the least amount of hissing. And so to do that, you're trying to obscure the taxes as many ways as possible. And that's what our tax code does. Any simplification would be an improvement.
It is a very good way to end the program today, and we will keep that in mind. You can visit him online at maradaonmoney.com. And David Marotta, valuable time spent. Thanks for spending it with us today on The Shilling Show.
Thank you so much for having me.
We are heading now to the break, and we'll have time for your phone calls at the top of the hour. Anything on your mind? Luke is standing by. 977-1070 is the phone number. Also, we'll be talking in the next hour to Supervisor Ken Boyd, the budget and beyond, what's going on in Albemarle County. It's not a pretty picture. Stay with us. Much more to come.